This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, from xenophobia, we talk about, or we go into a discussion on oil and gas, and obviously the energy transition, which presents a range of potential futures for the country. We're currently discussing the IRP. That hasn't been finalized yet, but I think it's fairly safe to say that oil and gas are going to still play a significant part in the global and the South African energy mix for many years to come. In Southern Africa, we've obviously this year had the reports of the Brilpadda discovery by Total, and for some time now we've been discussing the potential for Mozambique's offshore gas around Rovuma. That sparked a lot of excitement. How much of this is warranted, and what do we still need to get right to enable the sustainable exploitation of this resource? Well, to discuss that tonight, it's a great pleasure to welcome tonight's panel, John Clark, who's a partner from EY, Niall Kramer, who's an executive director at the Southern Africa Oil and Gas Alliance, SAGOA, and Dele Kuti, who's head of oil and gas for the Standard Bank Group. John, perhaps you could just set the macro table for us here. When the oil price crashed 5 years ago, it was a supply side story. We had shale producers who were keeping a lid on the price. The industry doesn't seem to have really recovered from a price perspective since. What are the major driving forces impacting the global oil market at the moment?
Thanks, Michael, and it's a real pleasure to be with you and your listeners this evening. As you said, 5 years ago, the oil price crashed. That was driven by supply factors. The world is not running out of oil, and a lot of new oil coming on the market, particularly out of North America, put a real dampener on the price. And we've seen the market move back towards much more of an equilibrium between supply and demand, but the factor that's really shaping the future is one of demand. There's no longer a belief that we're going to run out of oil. There's a belief that at some point we're going to start to consume other sources of energy. So the critical thing in the oil markets is where's the demand coming from? Who's going to buy the product? And you touched on some great new developments in South Africa and Mozambique, and I think having those right next to the demand in what's one of the most developed economies in Africa is a fantastic opportunity for you.
And obviously that needs funding. Dele, to bring you into the conversation on that point. And if you consider these themes that, okay, we're not going to reach peak oil anymore, what would funders typically be looking for in a project to make it fundable and mitigate some of the demand side risk that is now entering the equation?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Michael. I have to echo what John had mentioned in relation to what we see in the oil and in the demand generally. What we have seen actually generally now is that the market has moved away from peak supply to peak demand, which is actually driven by the fact that you want to see lower carbon emission all over the world. Technology has actually improved what we see in terms of cost of driving those things, and most importantly, you now see a situation where shareholders of companies are more interested in return. Energy transition is now very, very critical, including the fact that, when you looked at the IMO 2020 that is coming through, you now start seeing less demand. The demand in relation to oil required for the shipping services now require lower sulfur emission. So this actually call for significant financing required to support this project. Critical element of it is security. So what is going on right now is not great for security generally in Africa, because again, there's also potential significant gas discovery that could come through in South Africa. So you see a lot of strong project sponsor, which is critical to have this going through. We've seen a situation where in Mozambique today, close to between 150 to 200 trillion cubic feet of gas coming through into that market, being supported by the strong major like Exxon, and Anadarko, which is now being taken over by Total, is taking over that project. And we as Standard Bank, we're committing close to 7 digits in US dollars to some of those projects. We see a total of that project attracting close to between $50 to $55 billion of new investment that is going to come into that market. And tell you, Michael, this is currently going to have an impact on overall fiscal contribution that could come into those countries. We're expecting close to $4 billion of fiscal revenue that will come into Mozambique. And clearly, that will have a material impact even in what we expect around the Southern Africa, because the services require, you know, the work requirement, you know, in those markets is beyond what Mozambique can provide. You will expect that some of these to spill over into South Africa, to spill over into Zambia, to spill into Zimbabwe. So this is something that I think is important as part of the overall process to see that, you know, the country creates sufficient stability to continue to see this investment coming through into our market.
Superb opportunities upstream there, and in Treasury's paper published a couple of weeks ago, it was very interesting to see a change of tack in response to how we approach beneficiation to our local minerals in South Africa, and that is to rather look at those upstream service providers, be they the yellow machines that supply the mines industries. But very interesting to see that from Treasury. Hopefully it's the same approach that we take to some of the windfalls that we do see around oil and gas in South Africa. Now, from your perspective, what do you see as the main opportunities in the South and Southern African oil and gas sector over the next while?
Michael, my view is that with the broader discovery, that has effectively been a catalyst for other interest, for other explorers to come to do some de-risking. They're more interested in South Africa again. And when you spoke earlier on about the financing of these ventures, the kind of explorers that I am hoping will come in numbers are what I would call the A-list, and they typically come off their own balance sheets. So if you take Mozambique as a typical example, where within, by the end of 2019, there will probably be some $50 billion US dollars committed, maybe within the next 5 to 10 years, that figure will double. When you think what that can catalyze in terms of the services industry that we represent, that's absolutely catalytic. It just changes the game fundamentally. And they're very, very large numbers that go into very small, very local economies. So for me, the discussion really now has to be around how ready are we to digest these kinds of investments. Do we have businesses that are ready? Do we have the right skills in place? Do we have sufficiently harmonized legs and regs? And underlying all of that, we still have the biggest risk for South Africa, which is policy certainty. We've had the MPRDA, the Mining Petroleum Resource Development Act amendment, which went back and forth for, it must have been 4 years, and came to absolutely nothing. We finally had some agreement from ministry that will now be separated, and the petroleum development element will be new legislation, but we still haven't seen it. We've been told it's imminent and that it has been drafted. And then the other very important piece of policy certainty is the IRP, which I think has been delayed at least 3 times now. We've been told it'll go to Cabinet in September, and I hope it will, because that will give us a stake in the ground in terms of what we're primarily interested in, which is the gas amount that would be used in the generation of electricity. So we've got some very large and very important policy pieces still outstanding, but it does feel as if these are starting to come together. They probably won't come together without a bit of heartburn, and we have to be ready when these stakes go into the ground. This is an industry that's going to take 5 to 8 years to get up and running. So if we aren't ready as South African businesses, these are international companies, all of whom would have their partners ready in place and would bring partners from Russia, Mexico, Norway, wherever around the world. And the big lesson for South Africa, I think, has still got to be from Norway, which has now by far the best services industry in the world, and in the 60s had absolutely nothing. But they've underpinned all of their activity with very strong policy, and importantly with a very clear view of how they want their oil and gas to benefit Norwegians.
And they have
10 commandments and $1 trillion now in a sovereign fund.
To ensure there's no Dutch disease as well, Niall, otherwise yes. That is a very real possibility. I just want to move on quickly, John, to you, and from your vantage point, what you make of the recent developments that that Niall just spoke about, the fact that we do seem to finally be getting to a point where we'll have policy certainty. We've had the combination of the Department of Minerals and Energy now, which speaks to greater policy coherence at least. Is the international view from an investability perspective starting to improve for Southern Africa?
I think so. Both Niall and Deli have touched on the complexity of making successful investments in the oil and gas sector. There's a lot of moving parts. Clearly, you need oil and gas in the ground. If there's no resources, there's no amount of investment and regulation that can make that successful. So I think Total's discovery has really shifted the focus onto Southern Africa and the opportunities that are available. But that oil and that gas is today in the ground. If there isn't an investment climate and a regulatory climate that encourages the capital to come to South Africa. Capital can go anywhere in the world. There are lots of great opportunities out there. So I think you've got a fantastic opportunity right now, but if you don't capture the opportunity, that money will go elsewhere. So it's really important to get that combination of subsurface opportunities together with right climate for investment. And that's not the right climate today and tomorrow. That's the right climate over, I think Niall just talked about, 8 years. It could be longer than that in terms of, the overall investment horizon of these projects. So you've got to demonstrate an attractive climate today, but also the stability and predictability that people will feel comfortable that this is a basin to invest in over a long period of time. And I think we've seen that in the North Sea. I mean, I would say now that the UK's service industry isn't bad either, but where the regime has stayed stable and predictable, in Norway in particular, capital has been encouraged and investors have stayed for a long period of time. And that's what I think, particularly politicians need to recognize, that the political life cycle runs on a very different time frame to the energy investment life cycle.
And that really, from a banker's perspective, Dele, is how you approach evaluating these projects. Because in an environment where you perhaps have a fundamentally different demand side dynamic because of the green issues that we've spoken about, your projects have to be predictable and certainly at the lower end of the cost curve. So government needs to be mindful of creating those conditions in order to stimulate any potential industry.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, government concession is actually very critical to continue to be able to attract investment into this sector. And I have to agree that, sorting out those policies are one of the key elements of what is required to be able to make sure that you can continue to drive those investment. Because, again, the world is very clear, subsequent to the Paris Agreement that was signed, that you now need to see the world moving towards more of low-carbon sources of energy. And that's why today the demand for gas will continue to increase. I mean, if you look at various sources of energy today, between oil, gas, coal, biomass, biofuel, and hydro, oil and gas will continue to contribute close to 55% of what is required. So driving those investments are actually quite critical into the overall cover of what needs to do going forward. And I think most importantly, the need for applying the right environmental standard is critical. And that's why bank like Standard Bank will kind of focus on making sure that we use the equity principle to ensure that the right environmental and social impact of such projects are taken into consideration. But key element of that is the fact that you want a key sponsors, rated, as been mentioned by John, to be into those projects. And critically, once you have those A sponsors kind of client, and then you have, you know, a situation where they do abide by standard environmental structure that is there, enabling environment, you know, provided by the government will actually position some of those investments to continue. And the interesting thing now is the fact that the market is quite, you know, especially from the banking perspective, are actually very keen to support such projects, because it also kind of meets overall, you know, demand of, you know, driving fund and capital into some of those projects.
And one can't just look through one lens at a particular project. If it's going to stimulate economic growth, if it's going to create jobs, if it's on the gas side going to provide a transition and a window period to get away from coal into a more renewable future, all of these things need to be taken into consideration. Niall, as we wrap up the panel tonight, what role does the government play here in terms of catalysing key infrastructure for these projects? We see government wanting to go out to tender on Kuka and building the LNG plant there. What role would you like to see government playing in order to catalyse and kickstart some of the key infrastructure around exploiting this oil and gas?
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to see them grasp certainty is very important. It's just been mentioned that these investors all have global options, and unless the policy makes it commercially attractive, stable into the future, they're not going to come. And then we're going to end up, if we go ahead, with the B-list investors. And what we really need is people who've got the capital, the experience, the equipment, the know-how to do these projects. So the IRP, I think, is a very important next step, as is confirmation that it is in fact going to be Kuka, or it is going to be Kuka and Richards Bay, there is, and or Saldanha Bay, or what the role for these other ports would be, because there'd be large billions of rands of investment going into these local economies, and people need to know where it is going to happen. They'd also need to provide some certainty on who the off-takers would be, because from as the bankers would attest, they're going to want comfort around their inter-party risk so that they believe these projects can in fact go ahead. And at the moment, while the minister has announced that it will be Kuka, Transnet have put out a call for a tender, a study for a tender for Richards Bay. The Western Cape is looking at an independent activity through Saldanha Bay. So there's a little bit of swirl in that certainty there. Earlier on, you spoke about an energy transition, and we'd need to be careful that we don't think of ourselves as particularly special in one point in history. There's always been an energy transition in the movement from peat to coal, over to renewables, and we just happen to be at a particular point now where it looks as if we potentially could have gas onshore and offshore, and we need to have the certainty that's going to underpin the investment, and also we need an infrastructure vision into the future.
We absolutely
can't
do
LNG without the infrastructure.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, I've got to stop you there. We have run out of time, and I'm eating away from Carolyn Stain, who's eyeballing me here. She wants to sidle into the seat. Very, very interesting. Let's ensure that we do get all of our policy ducks quacking in a row. Thanks to all my panelists. Sylvia A up next in the Jazz Lounge. And as I said, Carolyn Stain here in Johannesburg with Winding Down. Good night.